think we're good. Yes, we are.
Good job, Morgan. You're the star for the day.
Okay. Real team member.
She's all team, bub. All right, we're here with a good friend and a team member of Waypoint, our podcast audience, to get to know a little better. Go ahead and say your name and where you're from and kind of just a little spew, and then we'll hit off of it and go from there.
I'm Seth Hershey. I'm from North Central Iowa. I've been living in Montana for going on 5 years now and hunted all across Montana pretty much in lots of different terrain, and excited to be a part of this team.
You're newlywed too.
Yeah.
You got a lot of cool things going on this year.
Yeah. Got married 5 weeks ago. So yeah.
How's that going?
It's going great. It's not all roses and rainbows, but
no, you got to endure the suck. I told you that's the key to marriage.
That's right. But I'm learning a lot and learning how to be patient and loving, and it's great. I would definitely recommend it.
So you grew up in North Central Iowa. What did you hunt there when you were young?
Just deer and pheasant, like one time.
Typical, about 360 degrees difference from here, huh? So I always wonder, you have a lot of hunting knowledge, and like most people gather that as a young age.
Yeah, so probably everybody on my mom's side hunted, and my uncle was a taxidermist, actually a world-class taxidermist. And so I'd love going to his taxidermy studio and looking at his mounts. And my dad hunted a little bit, but not much. I remember going on my first hunt with him, and we killed a buck on a deer drive, and I was so excited. And then I hunted with my grandpa a little bit, did some trapping with my grandpa, but really just spent a lot of time in the woods by myself, trying to find sheds and bedding areas, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah. If you hung around that taxidermy shop very much, that's like the barber shop for hunting. That's where all the gossip takes place. So you get to hear lots of stories if you're there very much.
Yeah, yeah, it's a cool place.
Yeah, intrigued you, all the big bucks coming in all the time. So what brought you to Montana?
A Wilderness Bible College for a year. I was really interested in Colorado, and I went and visited a school there, and it was even smaller than the school that I went to. So I went to a little bit bigger school and found this one and was interested in it, and so I kind of just took the leap and went. Second week there, we went on a 70-mile backpacking trip across the Bob Marshall. That was pretty life-changing.
Yeah, you like to do those long treks. You like to shed hunt and go stay in the woods and do lots of miles when you guys are shed hunting.
Yeah, I love shed hunting and just finding out the places that they live, mostly mule deer. It's so diverse. I mean, it can be all the way out on the prairie, or it can be 9,200 feet.
So what made you want to be a guide?
Actually, when I graduated the wilderness school, I saw an ad on Facebook for I think it was a 6-week guide school. And I considered it pretty hard. But I was broke, so I needed to get working and make some money first. And then after that, I was hunting so much. I mean, each year I'd hunt more and more and more and have to take off more and more time for it. And so I was just hunting, or I was working to pay for my hunting. And then, it was always still in the back of my head, but it was just on the back burner kind of cause I had, you know, a full-time job and had to pay the bills. But then I saw your ad and got interested.
How can I do hunting more and get paid for it?
That's right.
To just sit there at night pondering on how do I get in the woods more?
Yeah, I thought about trying to get more active on social and post more hunting content on there, and I think that lasted about 2 days.
So you started out as an apprentice with us last year. You just kind of fit right in with the group. Every single guide that was working those couple weeks that you were apprenticing, like, came to us and was like, you need to hire him. He needs to be a guide, like, right away. He knows what he's doing and everything. And that's very rare that, you know, the guides would come to us and say that, because most of the apprentices, they're learning, they're making a lot of mistakes and they're helping pack out and everything. So you kind of fast tracked it right into archery season. How did your first week of guiding archery go?
Oh, it went pretty good. Didn't have a whole lot of actual hunting time. We hunted the first day, kind of covering more ground than we probably needed to, and we found a couple bedding areas that we probably should have spent a little bit more time on, and just wasn't hearing much. I mean, they're pretty call shy, and there was a camp kind of about a mile away probably, and I bet you they were bugling into that basin probably quite a bit.
Yeah, it's ridiculous that people don't understand that how call shy elk can get so fast. Yeah. During our scouting, we've seen people blow a bugle tube every 50 yards, walking up over a logging road, up over a hiking trail, and bugling from the roads. And they're just like turkeys. They just quiet right down. But the patience of hunting the elk over here is a little different from hunting on the front and things like that, where you're just covering ground.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You'll cover 13 miles and then finally find the elk in the 14th mile.
Yeah, you can go 3.5, you know, just super slow here all day and work. It's weird. They're in like little bands.
Yeah.
Like instead of big groups. I know a lot of us got on elk the first day. You didn't look good after the first day.
No, I tried to take the tactics that I knew that worked on the front and that I'd used last year. To call quite a few bulls in and kind of mix it with this kind of country, and it's a different game. It really is, and I think you just have to learn, and you got to be a student of the game, you know.
That's right. Trust the process, and just when you learn how to hunt in different landscapes and different places across the country, it just makes you so much more of a well-rounded hunter for any conditions. You can just throw different tactics at it then.
Yeah, absolutely.
This place not being able to see anything, it makes you really have to trust assumptions a lot of times.
Yeah.
You can look real good or look real dumb in that sense. But luckily the timber, you're like, oh, they're there. They just didn't say nothing. That's what I tell them. I'm hunting quiet elk, so if they don't bugle back at me, it's probably not my calling. I'm strategically hunting them big, gnarly, quiet bulls.
Yeah, we never, on day two, when we shot that bull, we never even heard a bugle. We bumped him twice, and we were going real slow, like just sitting down like every like 50, 60 yards for a half hour to an hour to an hour and a half. And then I just wanted to get on this little bench just 50 more yards, and then we bumped a bull. And then we sat back down, and then we got back up after 10 minutes to get onto that bench again, and he was bedded right off that bench again. I mean, he didn't go far. And then we set up there for just about 3 hours and waited him out. After he sat for a while, then we worked back down, and we found his bed, and I watched him stand up.
How far was the shot?
36 yards.
A lot of brush?
Nope. There was one tree, one dead little tree that he kind of had to work around. It was kind of right in his vitals, but you know, if you lean one way or the other, you'll get the shot.
Yeah,
he shot really good coming in on the first day he came in, and just was very confident in his bow and knew how to shoot well. He'd elk hunted a few times before just for cows, but last year he had an opportunity at a bull, but he didn't have his bow with him. It was 30 yards up the hill. And here a bull comes in to run a random bugle that they blew. So he learned his lesson not to leave his bow anywhere but his side. So
that, I think that's what people, they come out here thinking they're going to kill elk, but you're dealing with an animal that's 4 or 5 years old most of the time that you're calling in,
at least.
It's breeding age. He's wanting to run cows around, and they don't let you get away with any mistakes. You have to like learn those rookie mistakes. So he had bow hunted a couple times, which that makes a huge difference just because of the trial and error. So he smokes this bull. This is what I've been wanting to talk about, because I still can't figure any of this.
I can't either.
It's the wildest thing ever. So He shoots the bull. You guys tell me it's drill. Yep. Pinwheel. Instantly, I'm like, oh, yeah, right.
Double lung.
We're getting through in-reach messages. That way we know whether we need to come in, help, and whatever. Yep. And no blood.
Nope. From 8 o'clock to 1 in the morning, we looked, and then his feet were hurting. So from all the side hill, and it's a big thing a lot of the flatlanders aren't used to is the side hill, and they can kind of go up and down sometimes, but that side hill and rubbing on the side of their feet, they're not used to. So we had to back out that night.
The effort was full force to try to recover that bull. That way we didn't have any meat loss because the hot temperatures, if that animal had expired, which us thinking it was pinwheeled. The whole time in the back of my mind, I'm like, yeah, definitely not pinwheeled if they haven't found it. So I'm just thinking that something happened crazy, and your mind sees stuff that really didn't happen.
Right. And I was kind of questioning that too, because I saw the trajectory of it, that I don't know if I blinked right as it hit it or something, or my mind was just playing tricks on me. Like, maybe you didn't see that.
And then all the clues to the puzzle you're finding, you're like, I probably didn't see this.
No arrow, no blood. I wondered if maybe it looked right and then just went right under him. But then I got to thinking again, no, I heard it. You know, you can hear the thwack and no arrow, no blood. It's crazy.
So you trail that bull how far in total?
That night, probably. I mean, we were just gritting. Yeah. We gritted probably everything within 400 yards. I mean, everything mainly downhill, little bit uphill and side hill, but like, I mean, I just kept on going and going. I kind of had to slow down for the client because his feet were getting sore, and so we had to take more breaks than I wanted because I just wanted to grid and grid and grid, you know, because there was no blood to follow.
Yeah, that's all you can do.
And it was just thick country.
So you go back in the next day, and the cavalry goes with you.
Yep. Yeah, and we made it 650 yards from the shot, and we were trying to get down to the drainage because we never did look all the way down the drainage just because it was such a climb back to where we had shot it. And so we were headed there, and one of the apprentices kind of got off track, and he had already gotten off track, so, and I had to keep track of, you know, five different people, and so I was kind of getting upset, and I didn't know what was going on.
Not finding the bull, it's all compounding on you, yeah.
Right, and trying to get, you know, six people to all be 15 yards apart, you know, walking through huckleberry brush that's as tall as you.
Like herding cats.
Yeah, and then somebody got off track, and then I started getting upset, kind of, and, you know, trying to keep track of everything because we had, you know, a plan and a goal. And anyway, they heard some brush cracking or something, and so they went more off track and they bumped the bull at 20 yards, and he was hurt bad. He wasn't doing good, and so then I got eyes on it too and watched his horns go through the huckleberry brush, and he was going real slow. And since we both had seen the shot, we didn't take a bow in there because there's no way if you double lung an animal, it should be alive the next day. Like, just no way. And so then we had to go back down the mountain.
Do you want us to edit that part out? I've did that before.
Yeah.
It's just one of those lessons you have to learn. And then now it'll never happen again.
That's right. There's a lot to remember sometimes. Oh, I know. And all you want to do is like
hunt.
Be like, hell yeah, we killed this thing. Yeah. Like when you actually find it, I mean, I'm just so jazzed up, I forget everything.
So you go back for the bow. Get it.
Yep. Okay. We're heading back up the mountain, and brought two other dudes with me. And our plan was to walk through the brush at about 50 yards apart, and I'd have the rangefinder in my hand and the hunter right next to me. And so if he stood up right away, I could range him right away and he could get a shot off. We're just trying to get shots in him at this point and get him down. And one of the other dudes, he found him actually right above a logging road, or me and the hunter crept up there, and we were about 10 yards away from him. And the plan was then for Tanner, one of the other guys that came with us, to cow call and make him stand up, and he wouldn't even look our way. He was just done. So then he shot him in his bed, and he expired within 2 minutes.
Yep. No meat loss.
Nope.
Covered bull.
Yep. So where was the first shot?
Yeah, because we had bets going on this. I did not believe it was Pinwheel.
It was, I mean, tucked as close as you could to the shoulder without hitting it.
It was friggin' drilled.
Yeah, I mean, and it was like, it wasn't high, it wasn't low. It was just, you know, your perfect standard double lung shot tucked into the shoulder. I mean, I've seen way worse shots, and they don't even go 100 yards.
Yeah, my bull went 40 yards that I killed, and I told you I didn't even shoot it that good.
Yeah, I shot mine last year, and I think I got both of the lungs, but it's top of the lungs, and it was fairly high. I was worried I would only get one, but he expired within 3 minutes and only went like 60 yards.
The will to live on that dude was insane.
Yeah.
Like, honestly.
He tried to get up, you know, after he shot him in the bed, and he couldn't even get up.
Yeah, I couldn't even. We have pictures. It's insane. Yeah. Complete pass-through. I'm shooting a kudu. Yeah. A kudu broadhead.
With bleeders.
Yeah. With bleeders. I mean, you couldn't do anything more correct than what happened. No,
500 grain arrow.
Everything on the money, the shot, and the bull just did not want to die.
No.
I mean, that's what it boils down to.
Right, yeah.
They rarely want
to
die.
Yeah, but I would have loved to have been there to help with that one, just to dissect it and look at all that. I mean, it was unreal.
There was no meat loss whatsoever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe just a handful from the couple shots, and that was it.
Yeah.
So he did recover. The elk got the most meat off of it. We cooked the heart and the tongue last night and had that for dinner with some of the clients. It was a really good scenario for very early in the week.
Yeah. Found it on Wednesday. We were out by back at the lodge by 9 o'clock.
So. Yeah.
You didn't have the same look on your face at supper when I seen you 2 nights later.
Yeah, I was jazzed up and not sad I didn't hear any bugles. And that night I only heard one bugle. So
mentally tiring on everyone, you know, because like 4 guides come in and they had action-packed days.
Yeah.
And then you're sitting there and you're like, oh no, I don't even want my client to hear this. We can see it on your face, but it's like, just stay with it. It'll be okay. It was just that kind of day for you. And then, you know, as the week progressed, a couple of the guides had those kind of days, but we ended up with 80% honest opportunity last week, with some clients having up to 3 opportunities. Yes. So it was a really great week for the first week of archery.
And then after we arrowed that bull and we were sitting, you know, you want to give them time. So we waited a good hour and a half and we heard more elk walking around us. So that was pretty cool too.
It's amazing that walking around does as an actual calling. If you do it right in the right places and at like slow and strategic pace, they just lay there and hear you walking. And if you're in where elk are at, they give you them little advertising bugles and that. Maybe only one a day, and then you slip on back down in there, and just like you guys, how you got your shot, they just appear because they hear them footsteps. And heck, that's as good as any calling most of the time.
And I'd almost take that over calling them in, because they're watching the bull so long, they've got time to calm their nerves down. And in the case of my guy, he had all the time in the world to take his shot. I mean,
they come in really surveying the ground over, looking for other elk. And if the hunter, the client, is pretty good on movement and drawing, yeah, that's the best way. Because he's not got a location exactly dead pinpointed from you calling constantly. They do come in searching hard.
Yeah.
Raring to go for this week.
I'll probably head back in there. When we went up to meet up with the buddy that helped us recover that bull, there he was walking around the top and came across 2 bulls up there. We heard bulls were fired up on the bottom. There was a couple other hunters in there that saw a nice 6x7, and there's just a pile of elk in there.
It seems to me there's more elk than there has been. I just noticed it from guides. Like, I don't see guides jumping around a bunch of spots. I see in the same truck stand at the same places for multiple days. So that just tells me that everybody's getting on elk, which is, that's great. So are we going to tell Cole's bull that they killed last night?
We always say the most inconvenient day to kill a bull, someone will kill one. And yeah, the other guide, Cole, figured that out. His guy got an elk.
Last hour of light.
So they hear a bull talk down in there. So they got a kind of a little bit of a pinpoint on where he's at. And he was probably talking from his bedroom. So they slip down in there and they're just walking and surveying the ground. And lo and behold, here comes footsteps, much like your story and everybody's this first week. Bull's traveling around. They get him stuck. Thought they shot him in the neck. They didn't think the shot was that good. Cole was pretty skeptical of recovering it, but then they found a massive amount of blood at the first spot.
Oh, yeah.
He was pretty confident from that point on. And it ended up that it entered in and got him in the front and went into the lungs, the chest cavity, and the bull was shot pretty good, and he only went 200 yards. Not near as good as the bull you guys arrowed. And
yeah, they actually had a blood trail to follow the entire way except for just one little section. I had no blood.
It was fun. We got to go in pack. It was a nice pack out down to a logging road, not super thick.
Oh, yeah. Almost full moon. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it was. Those are the nights why I love being a guide. It sucks being out there. I got to do it with my daughter. That was her first pack out. Yeah. That was kind of cool. Did they shot month? They missed the bull on Monday.
Yeah. This guy has had three opportunities. Cole has been riding a total roller coaster for his first week of archery.
They shot at that bull, ended up missing it. They thought it was already arrowed. And not too long after they shot, another bull walked in to like 15 yards and they didn't shoot it because they had already thought they arrowed one bull and then got up and found a clean arrow.
Yeah, that's the way it'll go, won't it?
Logan had probably the best client as far as walking. Micah's been out here. This is his second time.
And shooting.
He's like 6'3". Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Giant long legs.
I think he's 6'4", 6'5".
He said they're great for going through blowdowns, but then they sometimes get tangled up.
They hunted hard, and they were just about to close in on a perfect opportunity. And I thought it was just like the punchline of a joke. And
no one's going to believe this story.
So anyway, they were just about to close in on a perfect opportunity, and they heard a couple guys from a group shouting back and forth. They had a pet goat that was a packing goat that went up through the woods and would not stop.
I thought they were dudes were like into bestiality or something.
No, they just had, they had, it's a new thing out here to make goats pack your bags.
Which is a terrible idea.
So I have closure on anybody that's wanting to pack with goats or llamas, and I will love to argue with you. If you read any history books, mountain men and pioneers didn't have a string of llamas going through a mountain pass. So save yourself some money and get yourself a donkey and mule.
Cost yourself more money.
Yes.
And buy yourself a mule or a donkey.
Or just get you a Stone Glacier backpack or a Kafaru.
Yeah.
Logan said it never shut up and it ruined their opportunity completely. They thought it was hilarious. They had a good sense of humor about it. And they did a pile of miles this week, but just could not close on anything.
Yeah, they were chasing a pretty nice one for the last 2 days. Pretty big one.
So. Yeah.
They ring around the rosies with him.
Mm-hmm.
Close, but no cigar.
Once you get into one of those big ones, it's kind of hard to leave that to go find anything else. So that's what the client wanted to do. And that's what they did the whole week. Was kind of chase after that.
Yeah, and then my client showed up early, so we had to make everything work out that we could hunt the first week and still get their 6 days of hunting in. So I wasn't there for orientation. You guys covered for me. So I just like show up after everybody's already been here and in bed. And then so I don't even see anybody the first day. So I was just get some bits and pieces of stories and trying to learn everybody's names through the week. I had a great week. I had a youth hunter. And we called a bull in to, the distance is unknown still, but I would say it was 20 yards, right in there. The young guy, he just made a couple just hunting errors, you know, just not really, you can't even call them errors. They're just things that you have to learn when you're elk hunting, like how to move in a setup and things like that. But just, that was our best opportunity. And then we grinded a couple more out through the week, but epic first week. I mean, like pretty dang good one. The crew's awesome this year. Everybody's working together really well. It's nice when all you got to do is hear bulls bugling and they got a good percentage of getting an opportunity at that elk if it wants to play ball.
A lot of good hunters.
Yeah. If they want to play ball, they're probably going to lose most of the time. At least get opportunities.
Right. Right. And that's all we can ask for.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wade, also, I allowed him to go out with Tanner, one of our friends, and he was dead set on trying to practice guiding and calling a bull. We did not think that he was going to do that.
Jason Phelps.
So Tanner takes him out. There's no expectation of Wade calling anything in. And about an hour into their hunt, I get a video message of Wade calling back with a bull.
Challenge bugle.
Challenge bugling.
Oh, yeah, everything.
He kept whispering that in the video. Yeah. It just cracked me up.
So they dumb lucked into a whole pile of bulls that were
just like six bulls.
That was my whole goal in the few days that I had to hunt with my boy, is to make him fall in love with elk hunting.
Yeah.
And I was super pumped. I was so excited. I didn't get to be there for it, but he is hook, line, and sinker, dude, in the belly. When we were hunting the next day, every twig that snapped, that's elk walking down there. We got to get down there and scare him. And I looked at him. I was like, what did you say? He's like, oh, yeah, I like the call. He's like, maybe too much. He's like, but it's super fun.
I like to as well. When you get a big bull or a herd just fired up, man, they won't stop. They're coming in to fight.
Yeah, good times. We're having a lot of fun this year. So, all right. Hopefully we got more epic hunting stories next week.
Till next week.
Peace. So this is up. Over.